Hola amigos, soy Federico desde Madrid y cuando estoy en España soy feliz como un niño. Hi, my friends, I'm Federico from Madrid and when I'm in Spain I'm happy as a baby. Hola amigos, soy Federico desde Madrid y cuando estoy en España soy feliz como un niño.
Gracias.
Our guests today on Travel with Rick Steves are Jean-Benoît Nadeau and Julie Barlow. They brought us the story of French, and now they explore the history of the Spanish language in their book, The Story of Spanish. Their website is nadeaubarlow.com. That's nadeaubarlow.com. We provide a link to it in this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. You know, when I'm in Spain, Jean-Benoît and Julie, I'm impressed by the complexity of the linguistic terrain there. You can go to a sandwich shop in Madrid and see a menu with four languages, and they're all Spanish languages. Can you give us a little review of the dialects within Spain? Because it's certainly not all the Queen's Castilian.
The main other language in Spain is naturally Catalan, which is based in Catalonia, Barcelona. That's about a quarter of the population. It's a large language base. Most Catalans actually speak Spanish as a second language. The second group is Galician or Galician, that is in the northwest of the country, north of Portugal. Some people say that Galician is almost like Portuguese. I'm not going to go into this. And then in between, at the junction of the Pyrenees and the Atlantic Ocean, is the Basque country, another language, very ancient. In fact, Basque is a language that is spoken by about 600,000 people, but more importantly, it's the only non-Indo-European language in Western Europe, aside from Finnish, and I think Hungarian. So nobody can trace the origin of Basque. It's a very, very old language, completely different system.
It's fascinating to see the rough and tumble world over the centuries of little linguistic groups and how they thrive or how they struggle or how they fade away. And certainly Spanish has been a success story that way. Let's jump across the Atlantic and just take a quick look at Spanish in Latin America. Does that refer to the part of our hemisphere that speaks a Latin-based language instead of a Germanic language, either Portuguese or Spanish, in other words?
It's an interesting question because the term Latin America was actually created by the French at the end of the 19th century. They wanted to, through their diplomacy, to emphasize their link with Latin America. So they came up with that concept of Latin America, in which they were included.
And that would make Quebec a little bit of Latin America then, too.
Yes. But it was never understood that way at the time. The understanding of Latin America is something south of the Rio Grande.
And either Spanish or Portuguese speaking.
Yes.
For a lot of travelers, the big surprise is they learn, quote, Spanish in high school. They go to Spain, and it's different because they happen to learn Spanish that's spoken in Mexico. What's the difference between, they're both called Spanish, right? What's the difference between the Spanish spoken in Spain and the one you'll encounter in Argentina?
The largest difference is that in Spain, they have that TH sound akin to the in English in northern Spain, not in south Spain, southern Spain, but in northern Spain. Like they will say the C, gracias. Right. The Z also is pronounced that way. That's one big difference. Argentinians say vos instead of usted for tu, for you. That's one of the main...
So that's pretty small differences.
It is small differences. I mean, obviously, as in French and in English, too, the standard language is the same language. It's not a different language. So the written language is pretty much the same.
Oh, so like in a lot of cases, you've got the written language, which would be consistent, but it's just conversational dialects.
Exactly. And you'll see the same thing between French and Quebec French. It's not two different languages. It's just two different dialects or variants. But, you know, you'll see the difference inside a country from region to region between what's spoken in casual conversation and the formal language, which is standard and, you know, the same as it is everywhere else.
This is so fun to explore, and it would be important for people to have a little sense of this before their travels. The people who brought us the Bonjour Effect and the Story of French are exploring the history of the Spanish language with us right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Jean-Benoît Nadeau and Julie Barlow have written The Story of Spanish as a sort of biography of the Spanish language, from its origins with shepherds in Castile to its prominence in the New World. Their website is nadeaubarlow.com, which you can read in either English, French, or Spanish. There's a lot of ways that a foreign language creeps into our own language that we don't even recognize. What's an example how Spanish has become part of the English way of an American looking at the world?
Oh, the most famous way is by far the dollar sign. The term dollar comes from a German term for the silver piece that they used in Spain, because Spain was part of the Habsburg Empire. But the Spanish dollar, also known as the piece of eight, was the currency of reference from the 16th century until the middle of the 19th century. In fact, when the New York Stock Exchange was founded, I think in 1812 or 1820, the currency of reference was the Spanish dollar, which is why the shares on the New York Stock Exchange were traded in eights until like 1992. Hmm. It's because it was the piece of eight. And the dollar sign, properly speaking, is actually a section of the Spanish flag. You know these two columns of Gibraltar with the twirl of the curtain? Look at it carefully. It's an S with two bars. And that's what they used as a short.
So that S with the two bars originates in Spanish.
It was associated with the Spanish dollar, the piece of eight, the peso.
Wow.
And that's why in Latin America, they still use the dollar sign for peso, because actually it's the dollar that used the peso sign.
They
really
just put it on the other side of the number than we do, I think. Yeah. Spanish really is the unofficial second language of the United States. Review the importance of Spanish and the prevalence of Spanish right now in our country.
About 50 million people, I would say. That's no small number. More importantly, some important media, mostly TV and radio. Large following in terms of music and cinema. The United States is now one of the main centers of production for telenovelas.
So a lot of the telenovelas that are aired all over Mexico are produced in the United States?
I would not say a lot, it's a center.
Growing, but I think what struck us the most about Spanish is that, you know, despite a discourse and from what we hear in Canada, particularly right now, a sort of anti-immigrant discourse, people take for granted that they need to learn Spanish as a language of social promotion in the United States. People need to learn Spanish, especially where we were living in the South. Everybody needs to speak Spanish or feels they should speak Spanish. It's very like day-to-day, considered almost a necessity in the United States. And that's an amazing thing to see when you're outside of the country and you're hearing the discourse about immigration. It's like, in reality, everybody knows that Spanish is really useful and they're very motivated to learn it.
Well, 50 million people. You know, it's so easy to naively think a border is just black and white. North of the border, they speak this. South of the border, they speak that. Especially with the importance of media these days. If you could look at kind of a heat map or something and where the media goes and what language people consume that media in, it fades as you go north or south of the border. I know that I was down in Tijuana and so many people were really tuned in to public television from San Diego in Tijuana. And you've got this whole, the rise of Spanish-speaking media in the United States, right?
Yeah, we were naturally in Arizona, and we traveled to California. We have friends there, and we went. And one of the great sociological differences between Hispanics, it struck us, between Hispanics in Arizona and the ones in California, is that in California they've been there for longer, and they're more open about living there.
They're more self-confident.
They're more self-confident about their culture.
In California?
Whereas, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whereas in Arizona, it was a lot more recent. And they were not as confident publicly.
They're like newcomers rather than indigenous people.
Exactly.
Yes,
although even though when you go to Tucson, when you go further to the border where you're going to get families that have been living sort of on the border or across the border for generations, there's a difference in that too, between that and Phoenix. Phoenix is really a place where they arrive. In Tucson, you feel like you're in more the cultural confidence of Mexico.
You know, as we melt from one culture to another culture, the languages sort of intermingle, and we have this Spanglish situation. Does Spanglish threaten Spanish in any way, or what's the views on that?
I would not say that it does. What threatens a language is never borrowings from that language. It's the status, you know? If people are marginalized because of their language, that is the real threat to a language, because then they abandon it.
So when a language is fading away, because every year a few languages die, a handful of languages die, you get to a terminal point, I understand, where if you don't have a university, if you don't have media, if you don't have a press, it becomes a downward spiral.
But Spanish has all those things.
It's, of course.
You know, has every reason to be very confident, I don't think. And Spanish speakers have a sort of different attitude towards that, say, than French speakers do.
Because French are more defensive about that.
They're more defensive about it for different reasons, but the Spanish are a little less, they have a little maybe more of the philosophy you'd associate with English. They're a little more open-minded too.
So why would the French be different than the Spanish in that regard?
Well, it's complicated, but I think it has to do with the position of French on the continent. That is the problem of Quebecers. And the psychology of the French in France, which have to deal with their own history, the end of their colonial empire.
So they used to be really on the top of the pile.
Yeah.
And it was the lingua franca and so on.
To come back to Spanglish, I would say that it's actually a normal phenomenon. If you have a population that is largely bilingual, it's absolutely normal that in speech there's a code switching process, which is what Spanglish is. Yeah. People switch code.
Do they do that just for fun because it's cool to say hola?
That's more than hola, but it's because they're bilingual, they're capable literally in speech of choosing
which part of this, exactly,
and what message they want to convey. It's a little bit like the Japanese who have four writing systems and they use one of them in part of a sentence and then another language code in the other part of the sentence, and the message is in the choice of the code.
It's also, Spanish is an accessible language. I mean, I mentioned earlier the king in the 14th century who standardized the language. And one of the things he did was to make it phonetic, which the French never did.
Oh.
So Spanish is a pretty easy, it has a reputation as a, I didn't find it that easy, but it has a reputation as an easy language to learn, partly because it's easy to pick up the rules because the spellings are very uniform.
Oh, and the grammar, and the grammar is audible.
Yeah, the grammar is audible.
But it's a gender.
So I think it makes it.
It's got this gender thing like French and German that English doesn't have.
Is that something that
people just take in stride? It just seems to me it doubles the complexity of learning to speak a language.
No, if you grew up into it, that you actually do not think about it. The main problem is how it's taught as a second language. I'll give you an example. I learned German at one point and I was learning Arabic. And when they begin teaching you a second language, they will say, for example, let's use French and English as a comparison. They will say chair is chaise, for example, and table is table. But that's a mistake. You actually put your English grammar onto the French because, in effect, chair is la chaise and table is la table, you know? If you think in French, it's not table, it's la table.
Yeah, because it's always going to be, they're always going to be the two words together then, right?
Yes, the concept cannot be dissociated.
Ah, it's so that's fundamental,
when you grow up into it. So the problem is in the teaching. The problem is that it's taught using another system of thinking. And naturally, it complicates the entry into it.
I learned Spanish after I learned French. And the fact that I had been through one language with genders already wasn't a block for me at all. Like, I learned Spanish quickly because I simply just like didn't question the fact that I had to learn the genders, and they just come with the word.
If a noun is a certain gender in one language, would it be the same gender in another language?
No.
Nope.
Completely random?
No. I wish.
Even within Latin-speaking languages, French and Spanish, I can imagine German would be different.
They're not all the same.
There are similarities,
but it's, I would say 90%, but there's a 10% you have to be careful.
There's no
innuendo.
You know, there's no a mountain is a man and a river is a woman. You know, there's none of that.
No, it's actually the contrary. a mountain is feminine in French.
There's no logic to it. It's completely random, and you just got to think of them as wedded together. So when you say table, it is the table, and there's no question about the sex because that's part of the word.
Yeah, but it's like you learn a skill. It's like as if you learned something when you were really young. You just learn a skill for thinking of gender, and it just registers.
You've
done it once already. It's not.
We find it funny because the names in English, like Trinity and Honor, Trinity is a man's name and Honor is a woman's name. And in French, it's odd because Honor is masculine and Trinity is feminine. So we find it very comical in French that every time I hear the name Honor as a first name, I immediately think of a man.
Oh, my goodness. That's the kind of humor I will never be able to appreciate because I'm so far behind linguistically. This is so fun to talk about all these insights to language and the cultural and the heritage behind them. We've been talking with Jean-Benoît Nadeau and Julie Barlow. Their book is The Story of Spanish. And there's one question that I've just got to tap into both of you on because I can never get a straight story. What is the origin of the word gringo, the way Mexicans historically called people from the United States?
Oh, it's apparently a deformation of Greek, griego. It's something related to the idea. All cultures had their way of naming what was regarded as barbarous. You know, like the Greeks invented the term barbar because every foreigner spoke and it sounded like bar bar bar. So they invented the term barbar.
Uh-huh. And so just barbarous, like they weren't even human, they were just sort of animals, barbar, yeah. Barbarians.
So in English, you say, oh, it's Greek to me, right? It's foreign to me.
Oh, gringo.
But
they
did have that same expression, something similar in Spanish. And then the term evolved into gringo. There's other theories that it comes from a song that during the war of 1846, when they had a song that said gringo, because American soldiers were dressed in green. But I am not convinced of that one. The etymology I read was about Greek.
Okay. Jean-Benoit and Julie, you've put so much energy into sorting through these linguistic backstories of French and Spanish and so on. As English and French speakers, when you've studied this whole biography of the Spanish language, let's just finish our conversation with an example from each of you about the joy of Spanish. What did you discover? What have you learned that really delights you about Spanish?
Good question.
Yeah, good. It's not one thing in my case.
I think for me, it was, I mean, we decided to, you know, give this, really explore the situation in the United States, which I, you know, honestly didn't understand very well. And so I learned Spanish to write the book, and I learned it in Mexico. And the great joy of it was, you know, moving to Phoenix and slipping into the community of immigrants, which we were a part of. You know, our kids were at a school with a lot of Spanish-speaking, really, like, freshly arrived immigrants. And it was just seeing the world through their eyes and being able to communicate directly with them and, you know, getting that sense of it. And then it's always fun with this kind of book to be looking at the big picture of a language and understanding, you know, the intellectual background of it, and then to be living with it intimately in day-to-day relations. And it was, for me, that was one of the most exciting things about it.
For me, it was, I'm passionate about Mexico. It's a country I love. And in fact, Julie and I want to go and live in Mexico for a while. We will not consider our life a success if we don't go spend 3 or 6 months in Mexico. But to me, the big surprise was that actually going to Spain, which I didn't know before I researched this book, and discovering a radically new country, completely different from Mexico, to which I had full access because of the language. Mm. I mean, to me, that was the great pleasure.
Oh.
I could just enter it, interview the director of the academy in Spain, in Madrid, and you interview this and that person just using the same language skills I had for Mexico. I mean, that's what the global language is about.
That is such a beautiful and a powerful a blessing when you're traveling, to be able to connect directly by speaking the language of the people you want to get to know. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with Jean-Benoit Nadeau and Julie Barlow. Their book is The Story of Spanish. Thank you very much. Gracias.
De nada.
Thank you. De nada.
You can listen to Julie and Jean-Benoit's earlier appearances about the nuances of the French language. You'll find links with this week's show notes at ricksteves.com/radio. Insider advice for enjoying your first trip to Spain is ahead on Travel with Rick Steves.